Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You know, people, you can go back to any era of history and find a group of people who say, like, you know, that have bad ideas and that feel completely justified by those ideas. And we could, I don't want to get into it because we can all in our own head. I mean, I don't like the people who are always like, go to Hitler right away. So I'm not going to be like, well, but think about just like in American history, the amount of bad things that happen to people based on misinformation, misperception, groups that were treated wrongly. And so all I'm saying is like, nobody has a monopoly on the truth, but like there is a moral right and there's also data.
How you day? That was the voice of Patrick McGinnis. Some of you might recognize that name as a repeat guest. That's right. He was on the podcast a few years ago to discuss how he came up with the word FOMO. The FOMO. Fear of missing out. Many of you use that currently in your vocabulary, but he was the one that came up with the word, and it was a fascinating deep dive into how a term can be popularized. Today, Patrick is talking about FOMO again, but from a different perspective. He discusses how individuals, entrepreneurs, and businesses can prepare for the new world of FOMO, whether it's at work, working remotely, when you get back to the office, in your careers, launching a new venture, or in your social lives. In essence, Patrick himself is questioning what society is supposed to look like going forward. And I always like these type of conversations because, well, they are conversations, but they provide insight into a new way of thinking or how to reframe old ways of thinking. I'm sure you're going to have a lot of thoughts, and don't be shy. Let me know on social media at Ty Roxon. Till then, enjoy the episode. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of As Told by Nomads. And today, I hope you're having some FOMO because I have Patrick McGinnis. Now, Patrick McGinnis, if you remember, is an individual, a gentleman that I interviewed a while back. And he was talking about how he came up with the term FOMO, fear of missing out. It's been a while, and I'm glad to have him back. We're going to be talking about how FOMO evolved during the pandemic and how you can make decisions right now, especially given the interesting world that we have today. So I'm very, very excited to welcome you back, Patrick. Welcome.
Good to be here. You know, for everybody listening, if you go back and listen to that first interview, like from 2016,
Sheesh.
It was the first interview I ever gave. And I went back and listened to it. I don't know when, but I did. And I have to say, you were really good. I was not good. Like, I didn't know what the heck I was doing. I think I had a really bad headset. I would like to think I've improved.
You know, I don't know. You're very kind. You're kind to me, and you're being hard on yourself because I didn't think it was bad. But I think the same thing when I go back to listen to my previous episodes and people say things that are different. But I will never forget that episode because I remember when it was pitched to me and I was like, FOMO, everybody's talking about FOMO. And hearing how you came up with that, it was fascinating because a lot of people in the audience are in that ideation phase. And yeah. Here, you know, just seeing how you capitalized on that was something that I really hope a lot of people replicated. But since we've talked, the world has changed, my friend.
Has it? What do you mean?
I don't know. Something about pandemic and COVID and the virus. But it's really changed. I mean, we had something shut down the whole world. Our generation, this is something that I don't know. They're saying since the Spanish flu, but even this might have even been more so than the Spanish flu. So I'm curious, as you are someone who is a thought leader in this space and you observe and you get to work with companies and individuals, what did you see with the concept of FOMO as we were in lockdown and as many countries are now starting to come out of it and we're dealing with vaccine passports and all these vaccinated versus unvaccinated? What have you noticed?
Oh my goodness. Well, we'll have an hour and a half worth of material here, but I'll start. Let's see. Well, I think the whole question of vaccine passports, mm-hmm. we should talk about.
Okay.
And I don't want to go there yet, but that is super interesting. And I just wrote a piece for NBC News about it. So it's been, I've been thinking about it like this week, but so FOMO, you know, when I wrote the first article where I coined the term FOMO back in 2004, it was in the humor section of the student newspaper of Harvard Business School. So it was a total, it was like a funny thing, like, ha ha ha. You know, high class problem, right? And then because of Mark Zuckerberg, who was a mile away from me at the time building the first version of Facebook, because of Mark, FOMO became this like global thing. It wasn't just a high class problem. It was something that preyed upon all of us because our devices are designed, social media is designed to provoke FOMO because we can so easily compare ourselves to others no matter where we are in the world. You can be in West Africa and you can compare yourself to somebody in China and vice versa, right? So there's always something better out there and it's all curated. Now with the pandemic, everybody thought FOMO was gone. I remember like reading on Twitter, it said, some people had written, you know, like the best thing about the pandemic is that there's no more FOMO. And this is like during the quarantine. And I thought to myself, well, that's very unfortunate for a guy who has a book coming out on FOMO in about 2 months. But, you know, it's not about me. I'm a man of the people. If it's meant to be that there's no FOMO, like I'm, you know, it's good for humanity. And I remember people saying like, oh, Shakespeare wrote some of his best works during a pandemic. And so I thought, well, I'm going to get so much done. I'm going to get, you know, in crazy shape. I'm going to, you know, market the heck out of my book. I'm going to do all these amazing things. And of course, like I'm going to read. I had a stack of books. I made a stack in my apartment. I read three of those books. I did not necessarily get in crazy shape, probably got in worse shape. Because, you know, what was I going to do? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happened to many of us is that we didn't achieve what we wanted because we ended up being on our devices all the time. At the same time, we realized FOMO wasn't just about parties. It was about like your life, your entire life. You're missing out on the life you should be leading. So it became a lot deeper than it was before.
That's wow. I didn't even think of it that way. The fear of missing out. I remember where I was during the pandemic. And for me, it was those waves, right? It was like, oh, there's a virus, but it's not that serious. It hasn't come to the United States here. And I live in New York. Well, it hit a few people in New York. Fans are going to wear masks. Then Tom Hanks gets in, the NBA shuts down.
Oh yeah, that's right. Tom Hanks.
Yeah. And then I was like, wait, but they're shutting down an NBA game? And then for people like you and I, it really started to hit when events started to, quote unquote, they started to, first of all, postpone. And like you, I was planning a bunch of things and then it became cancellation and then it became fear. Wait, am I not going to have any income? Wait, what's going to happen? How long is this going to go? And I just remember just sitting down in my bed, freaking out.
Yes.
And then I eventually figured out to normalize, but it was a whole traumatic event. And I was happy that I was going to therapy during that moment because I just was reevaluating a lot of things. And now that you've framed it as fear of missing out, it is. I was like, I'm missing out on income. I'm missing out on opportunities. I'm missing out on family. I'm missing out on friends and all these things. And I'm not even necessarily an extrovert. I'm more of an ambivert. And a lot of people are more surprised because I spend a lot of time inside, you know, trying to cultivate my energy despite my extroverted personality. But that concept then is going to lead to the next question. What did you find most helpful to come out of that or to learn from the FOMO that the pandemic infused?
Yeah, you know, and I'm in New York too. And I was in New York the whole time. Were you here as well? You were here March, April, like when it's just sirens and like,
yes,
there was nobody. And it was, that was some dark,
it was dark,
dark stuff.
You know, when the sirens kept ringing, I kept, and this is my morbid thought. I kept thinking, oh my gosh, please don't let it be another death. Don't let it be another death. Because the numbers kept rising every day. People forget, you know, Broadway and Times Square was shut down.
So, oh, yeah. No, and the human desperation in all forms, because there were also just like anybody, the thing about this pandemic that's whack is that anybody who was a little vulnerable already just got pushed off the edge. So you saw people like, just people on the streets, like if you walk through the Garment District, which is, you know, in the 30s on the West Side, people who were clearly, you know, not well mentally or on drugs, like screaming and yelling. It was like, it's not so much like that anymore. It's really reverted, but the amount of just desperation in New York City that was exposed, it was crazy. And so, you know, I, like you, I remember everything got canceled. Everything I was doing. And I was like, whoa, like every source of income, you know, because I have a plan every year, like was coming in, every source of income disappeared in like 4 days. It was so shocking. And the thing that got me through, there's really kind of, I would say, two things that were really fundamental to making it through. The first was I meditated every day.
Yeah.
So that really helped because it just, I don't know, it just was like very grounding for me. And it's just good for everything. It just puts you in a better headspace to deal with reality. Mm-hmm. Number two is that, you know, my first book was called The 10% Entrepreneur. And it's about how to be an entrepreneur without quitting your day job, diversifying, doing lots of different projects. And I remember in March when everything got canceled, I was like, oh my God. This is like 2008 all over again, which was the inspiration for my first book and everything. Cause I lost my job, my company blew up and it was a disaster, but my diversification worked. All the different projects I had, some of them did really well during the pandemic. Anything e-commerce did really well. So I just remember thinking to myself, wow, I'm so diversified that even though this pandemic is awful, I'm actually doing great financially, which was really a relief to me because that was a big concern. And so I think that was really important. The other thing I would say is like finding ways to occupy time. So I never cooked before. I became like a chef during the pandemic. I would every night choose a part of the world and then find the cuisine and like cook it. And so I made some like very elaborate 4-hour dinners and things. So like all that helped because otherwise, like I'm a very extroverted person. I'm not an ambivert. I'm a super extrovert. And like Zoom is not going to cut it for me, but being able to put my energy into some kind of project every day that I could look forward to, like, well, tonight I'm going to be busy for 4.5 hours making like sabik sandwiches. That helped too.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear you say that because I can imagine a lot of the audience listening now and saying, well, glad, you know, Patrick was able to have diversified income. I'm still struggling. And I can also imagine people saying, well, it's true. I did find some aspects of myself, you know, throughout the pandemic. And in their next thought is, how can I capitalize on that or systemize it? Right. So for those listening right now who maybe weren't able to diversify themselves or, you know, were living a paycheck to paycheck and then it got cut. And those that found a moment that they hope wasn't a trend and hope to continue post-pandemic, what would you say to them to do right now so that they don't re-experience this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm super sympathetic to that situation because I lived it. I had my practice run for this before in 2008. I was working at a division of AIG. AIG blew up. My stock fell 97%. So literally for every buck, I had 3 cents. It was bad. And that was when I realized that you can't bet on any one thing. And I think that like my faith in sort of corporate America, but also just the idea of like one job is going to provide for you.
Yeah.
It was gone. I was done. I was like, this is just bad. And so as a result, I started diversifying myself by investing in things and starting things and being an advisor to things for equity and doing a bunch of different projects. And so, you know, the great thing about diversification, if you ever studied like finance 101, the whole point of diversification is that you have all these things that are not correlated. So like one thing goes badly, but another thing will go okay. And what's crazy about the pandemic too, from a macroeconomic perspective or even a microeconomic perspective, is like, you know, some things did horribly, other things did really well, right? And so, you know, I think that what I would encourage people to do is to start now. And, you know, obviously I think my book, The 10% Entrepreneur, is a great place to do that. But just think about you know, how can I diversify my portfolio of investments? How can I diversify my streams of income? Are there side projects I can do? What have I learned? Who else is doing this? How can I partner with them? And don't rely on one job, because as we've seen, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those listening, I'm going to put the links to his books and website. So the book 10% Entrepreneur is definitely going to be there. And so if you're looking for a resource to use to give you a structure to understand how to start that diversification process, it's a good place to start. And, you know, as he said, he talks about it from the perspective of, you know, coming out of the 2008 financial crisis, also losing stock in something that he had high hopes for. So that'll be one place to start. The other thing that I hope you all are thinking about is decision making. I know that some people really had problems coming to terms with what decisions to make. And you've come up with something on decisions, which is interesting because I'm very curious about this. But how can people find a decisive way to make the right choices for themselves today in COVID world or post-COVID world, hopefully?
Yeah, so decision making has become, you know, a big focus of mine. If you think about FOMO, FOMO is really a decision making problem. It's about deciding, you know, you got to live your life. You got to make tons of decisions every day. And if you're feeling this fear of missing out, you may make decisions based on the fear rather than, you know, the real logic of a decision. So it's like, you know, we see that all the time. If you look at just like job searches, right? People will apply for tons of jobs.
Yeah.
Because they're like, well, and they're applying for things that they don't even want, but they're like, well, I should do that. And so you're diluting your energy a ton. And at the same time, when I invented the word FOMO, there was another word I invented at the same time in the same article back in 2004 that has not gotten as famous, although it's still, you know, used. It's been written about in a bunch of places like the New York Times. It's called FOBO, or fear of a better option. The idea that when we have a perfectly good thing in front of us, like say a job offer, we're afraid to take it because, oh my goodness, what if something better comes along? Should I hold out? Maybe I should, now that I got this job, maybe I should start applying to other jobs and trying to get more things so that I can, you know, have more choices. And that's a real problem because we live in a world now where we're all overwhelmed with choice. Think about just going online and try to buy a ticket for an airplane or choose a hotel or buy something on Amazon. Like we have so many choices in our lives, in just daily life, also in what we can do. You know, we can move anywhere in the world. We can start any kind of business we want. We can do many, many things. And so what I try to teach people in the work that I did in my new book, Fear of Missing Out, Practical Decision Making in a World of Overwhelming Choice, is how to get rid of all that noise, tune into what's truly important to you, choose the thing you actually want, and then be comfortable missing out on the rest. So yeah, choose it. I mean, it's one thing to choose what you want, but it's another thing to then just move on and not be like stuck in a cycle of regret. And I think that's really, really hard and people struggle with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Be comfortable with missing out. Mm-hmm. As you were listing those examples, I also wanted to factor in dating, right? So when the swipe generation and, you know, so millennials, Gen Z, younger, a lot of the idea of options being available to you or it being reframed as, well, you're making this too soon. Don't think about, you know, what about this other person? Or even thinking about the idea of, hey, don't settle. You know, it can be, which can be fair advice. I'm not going to dismiss that.
Yeah.
But sometimes we get into this over analysis of the idea that maybe we are settling because there is a better option. And then it becomes 2-3 years and you have narratives about yourself, which are not necessarily healthy. And that factors into deals and decision-making. And I have a lot of friends who had thought about entrepreneurship before the pandemic. And once the pandemic hit, were really kicking themselves as like, I made a mistake. And I was trying to say like, you know, this is an opportunity. But I think sometimes it rang hollow because, they really couldn't defeat that, self process where they really disappointed themselves. And in this book that you wrote, are you saying that you have a framework for people to really work through those moments where they fear they lost an opportunity that they can't regain? Is that in the book?
Yeah. I mean, I think the core to decision making, and by the way, what you said about dating is so true. so true. And I talk about it a bunch. I'm not a dating expert. But apparently dating podcasts like to have me on because they talk about the FOBO. It's all about FOBO. Like that swipe culture. It's like, oh, there might be a better person. Let me swipe. And also it's all about FOMO because, you know, you see a profile and it's like the most perfectly curated. Nobody's going to be like, let me find an ugly photo for my dating profile.
Right.
Of course not. Everybody looks amazing. You have to look like seven pictures deep to realize like, oh, that's what the person really looks like. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's just messed up. And these companies know that they've created addictive apps. They're playing on your human sort of frailties to get you to swipe and swipe. So that's a very true observation. Now, in terms of the decision-making, you know, decision-making is about choosing what you actually want. So having criteria and then doing the research to figure out if something meets your criteria, that's part A, then you choose. But the problem is many people do that work, but then they're not willing to let go of everything else. And that's where the pathology happens. It's like when you can't let go, choose one thing and let go of the other options, that's where you get stuck. And so much of the work that needs to happen is being like, I've assessed all these things. By the way, maybe there's five good options, but I'm going to choose one. And then I'm going to be comfortable letting go and I'm not going to feel regret. Because if you think about it, when you make a decision, yes, you are letting go of some things and you're passing them up. What we're really doing is moving forward to the next set of decisions and options. And so you aren't losing out. You're actually gaining, you're creating more options. And you also, you know, you can't know what was going to happen if you had chosen the other way. So it's not worth like sort of investing in time and energy and that could have been, would have been, should have been, and living in regret. It's just a very unhelpful mindset.
Yeah. And the other thing is that it takes you away from the present moment, which you ironically are missing out on. and then, you know, if you get into this cycle of telling yourself the narrative that you repeatedly miss out on opportunities, and then you're like, I'm just horrible. I don't know what's wrong with me. And then there's the comparison that comes, right? Oh, but look at this guy, that person invested and I said no. And now that person is a millionaire. I know I saw this with Bitcoin. And the whole Bitcoin.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Don't start with me on Bitcoin.
You see, but the reason I love this conversation, I always love having you on, because it's not only is always conversational, it does apply to everything. We've talked about data and decisions, companies and all that, but Bitcoin's another thing, right? Or whether it's Dogecoin or net, then I invested and then it went down and now it's
GameStop, AMC,
yeah,
all the meme stocks. Like people are investing in these things. So the definition of FOMO is a anxiety that something better is happening than what you're doing right now. It's also a fear of being excluded from a collective experience. So you take a look at like Bitcoin or GameStop, like there's a part that's like desire to be part of something that looks really great because you think you're gonna make money. So there's an aspirational element. But the other part is like a fear of being excluded. It's like, if you're on a Reddit forum and everybody's like people, it's like a sports team, like buying Bitcoin is like, or Dogecoin is like being part of a club.
Yeah.
And I think that like, let's just stop and think about that. Like your investment portfolio isn't supposed to be part of like being cool or being part of a club or because Elon Musk is tweeting about it. That's a crazy way to invest your money. It's totally nonsensical.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and to that point, do you remember when, I'm sure you know this, when Elon Musk was hosting SNL?
Yes.
And that was the whole thing. And you know, I don't know a lot about Bitcoin or Dogecoins, but I fell into that. I was telling my friend, yo, get out of Dogecoins, Doge to the moon. and I love hearing you say that because my fear there was I'm going to miss out. And I didn't even know anything about Bitcoin or Dogecoin or any other alternative currency. I just had seen on Twitter, I had gotten all these alerts, and that was my mindset. So to your point, my motivation was I'm not going to be excluded out of this. And then ironically, it, you know, went back down and I was like, oh, shoot.
It's like, listen, FOMO is a great motivator. And so if your FOMO is telling you want to learn about Bitcoin, like go learn about Bitcoin and maybe put a toe in the water. It's okay. You know,
Yeah, yeah. But take the right information from it is what I'm gathering, right?
Yeah.
And so, and yeah, and ultimately that's what I was learning experience for me, because I did start learning more about it. But I also felt comfortable with the decision of potential loss. I remember having that discussion. I said, you know what? If I invest this amount and I lose it and I don't get it back, I'm okay with this. It's coming there. But I also heard stories of people investing almost their whole savings into it. And, you know, it worked out for those who were early on it, but it didn't work out for a lot of those people who probably needed the savings in the next 2 to 3 months and were hoping to cash out after that SNL appearance.
It was crazy. No, it's.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We will never know, because, you know, we have no data to support this, but, you know, the people who, even if you got in early, if you have FOMO and you don't sell and you don't consolidate your gains.
Oh yeah.
You know, so there's a reason why we have economic bubbles. If you think about the history of the global economy,
yeah,
you have like all these stories of bubbles in many different ways, and like everything from stocks to Beanie Babies, right? And it's because people get in early, they hype something up, and then all the crowd rushes in, the herd rushes in, and then the early adopters are like, oh my God, I just made a ton of money. They get out. And then the people who showed up late tend to lose. But those who don't sell out from the early adopters also get hurt. So, you know, the reality is when you buy an investment, it's kind of funny. Like, you can buy an investment at one and then it goes up to 10 and you sell it at 8 and you're thinking all about the 2 you lost, not the 7 that you gained.
Yes. Yes. That's very real. Oh my gosh. Yes.
That's crazy, right?
It's mind blowing. And I love the way you put these things.
Just wanted to stop by here before we get back to the episode. I wanted to let you all know that I do have a collective for people who are interested in developing their cultural competency skills, becoming more anti-racist. And it's a resource of things that you can do with your family, with your school, with yourself, to work through your individual journey to become a better culturally competent leader. It's called UID Collective, and the link is in the show notes, but it's a mix of courses, it's a mix of resources, things you can download, and all you need to do is sign up as a member. It's a monthly membership. I'd love for you to check it out, use it with your friends, use it with your family, use it with yourself, okay? The link is in the show notes. It's called UID Collective, and it's for those of you that want to improve your cultural competency skills. Back to the episode.
Those listening, I hope it's clear to you right now that FOMO didn't die of COVID-19, as you like to say. It's actually still alive, but it can be good and bad, but dependent on how we translate it and what we learn from that. I think everything is information these days, and it's very important for us to be very self-aware and know our instincts, because a lot of institutions, as you pointed out, prey on those instincts, hope for those instincts. They are relying on the fact that you might have a scarcity mindset. And in fact, they're hoping to profit off of that. And if you're not aware of your triggers, you're going to fall into that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, something else that's triggering a lot of things is COVID and vaccine passports. You said you wanted to talk about this earlier. I'm noticing this is how I'm setting it up. Now, you know, I believe in COVID, just full transparency, and I've gotten vaccinated, but I also have people that haven't, right? People in family, people that I love. And what I'm noticing is this. there's the vaccinated versus unvaccinated, but amongst the unvaccinated, you have people on several camps. I'm healthy. It's not going to affect me. I don't believe in COVID. It would happen too soon. Well, I'll do when I have to do it. And so, don't call me a Fox News person. And so it becomes this division, but even who you're dividing yourself against, they're not even all aligned on the same thing. And then I've seen families and friends lose just connection over this. I was at my barbershop yesterday, and he was saying that people are swiping right now, and then people were talking. And then once they didn't get the right answer on vaccinated, they got ghosted. It's a real thing. So what are your thoughts on this? Because people feel like it's a huge deal here right now.
It is a huge deal. And by the way, you're so right. I mean, I think if we look at the unvaccinated communities in a place like New York City or across the country, so there's like these different constituencies, right? There's one constituency is like the fear constituency. People are afraid. And I understand distrust of institutions, especially among communities of color where in the past, like the medical establishment did them wrong. So like, totally get it. Then you have people who just read something online that's crazy and they just don't have a filter to be able to understand that, which is really sad because they're being manipulated. Then you have, because I was like running to get the vaccine like day one, right? So like, I was like,
woo. Are you early adopter?
That's all I want. I thought my view is it was the biggest problem in my life was not being vaccinated and I need to solve it. Yeah. And I was right. it's made a huge difference for me. Then you have the people who it's like their Dogecoin. It's like being unvaccinated is like as a badge of honor of like, I stand for this. I'm part of this group. I'm politically in this place. And so those people, I don't know how you convince them other than like you literally have their whole family die. But even some of those people you hear on TV, they're like, yeah, my wife just died of COVID, but I'm still not getting the vaccine. So like, I don't think we can really save those people. Like, it's just, I just don't know what you can do in terms of incentives. You can offer them money. You can offer them facts. Like, they're just not going to do it. The people who are more on the wavering or whatever, there's an opportunity to work with them. And so cities are starting, and it started in France and Italy, but now it's happening in New York City and San Francisco and other places, is the vaccine passport, with the idea that you're saying to people, well, fine, you don't want to get vaccinated, don't get vaccinated. But if you want to do anything nice, you have to have a vaccine. Otherwise, you're going to miss out. And so you're using FOMO as a human motivator to get people to do something. And obviously, employers are actually doing a step beyond that and doing vaccine mandates and saying you have to do this, right? Yeah. But I think that the vaccine passport, we'll see. I mean, it's too early to know, but it's my sense that you can probably convert a lot of people, because if you are, you know, it comes up to this winter and you literally can't go anywhere because you're not vaccinated and you can't prove it, or you have to do COVID tests like every day in order to go to restaurants and go to other places. Like, I just think people will say like, I want to live a life. I want to live normal life again. And I don't think it's unfair, because frankly, the science tells us that the more people that are vaccinated, the more likely there won't be new variants, the more likely we're going to move beyond this. And I, as a person who has been vaccinated and, you know, also did masks and stuff, I find it really frustrating when, you know, it's sort of like if you were on the highway and 30% of the people were just like, the rules don't apply to me, I don't care, I can drive as fast as I want. Fine. If you want to do something bad for against yourself, like, I don't want you to do that, but like, I can't prevent you necessarily. But if you want to do something bad that affects me, that is a problem. And so I'm very supportive of vaccine mandates. I think it's powerful. I think the FOMO is a real driver of their effectiveness. Yeah. Because humans don't want to be excluded. It goes back to the earliest days when we were roaming around East Africa. You know, we traveled in packs, right? Animals travel in packs.
It's hunters and gatherers, yeah.
And yeah, exactly. It's imprinted into our DNA. But nowadays, it's not about like food and shelter. It's about like social inclusion.
Yeah.
And so I'm all for it.
Yeah, you know, and you and I are aligned in this. And I know right now we have listeners who probably or turning off right now because of what we said. And it's something, to your point, being okay with that, right? Well, whatever side.
Okay with it, but also like, if you can't listen to what we're saying, like be challenged, like be comfortable listening to somebody who doesn't agree with you. Don't just watch, you know, the media that tells you what you want.
Yeah, but the irony is that that's also another thought, that vaccinated people are being manipulated. right? Which is the, which makes it, it's such an interesting thing because they then argue FOMO on their side. Like, you don't, what are you talking about? And so that's the tricky part for me. And I, like, you know, for as someone who has, I'm also a professor and it's mandated there. So I know what it's like. Yeah. I have family members again who aren't vaccinated and I have friends who are a lot. So I basically have this conversation every day and I'm vaccinated. And so sometimes when I have to ward along days, I'm like, I've heard everything and I'm navigating anger, compassion and frustration. I'm just thinking about the mindset of the world where I know people will no longer be best friends. I know families will be cut. I know businesses will be there. The NFL is an example of doing what you're saying. They're basically saying, hey, you don't have to get vaccinated. You're not going to have access to the gyms as everyone. And if enough people on your team get, or, you know, get COVID, it's a forfeit. It's forfeit. And then, you know, you get lost and all those things. And then the argument is, well, you take my freedom, right? It's all this circular conversation. And I am so curious to see what book will come out of you from this, because FOMO is being argued on all sides. That's the major point I'm basically making here.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I just think that we live in this post-facts age where everybody thinks they can invent their own reality. And also there's tremendous amount of money and energy that goes into manipulating people. Yeah. And so people read something on the internet and they believe it. In fact, you know, it's interesting how the internet has been used to create like political strife all over the world, right? And so that's just what's happening. And I'm sympathetic to people who are being manipulated. I think it's unfortunate, but it's like, I can tell you something, yeah. You know, people, you can go back to any era of history and find a group of people who say, like, you know, that have bad ideas and that feel completely justified by those ideas. And I don't want to get into it because we can all in our own head. I mean, I don't like the people who are always go to Hitler right away. So I'm not going to be like, well,
even outside of Hitler, it's everywhere.
Just like in American history, the amount of bad things that happen to people based on misinformation, misperception, groups that were treated wrongly. And so all I'm saying is like, nobody has a monopoly on the truth, but like there is a moral right and there's also data. There you go.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to reading this article because I didn't know you had written one until you said it. So it's fascinating. And, you know, I do believe we live in a world of nuance governed by binary systems sometimes. But I do also believe that there are just some moments there are black and, you know, I think everybody has their own version of black and white. I think it's important for us to define that. But, you know, for me as well, when it comes down to really being safe and trying to do something to have a solution, I very much have the same opinion. Okay. Now, as you've been traveling more and more, and I know you got vaccinated, so that's made things, I imagine, a little easier, and the cities open up more, and some businesses have really converted well to remote and hybrid.
Yeah.
What do you see out of this, I mean, 2021 and forward. Your business, yourself, everything.
I think that, okay, wow. I mean, first of all, I think it's too early to know.
Yeah.
But I think here's some of the things that I think we learned in the last 2 years. I think we learned, number one, that in person isn't necessary all the time, that we can have more flexible work systems, whether that means replacing travel with Zooms, whether that means only working in the office a certain number of days a week. Yes. I think we've also learned at the same time that human connection and face-to-face is essential. And so you can't simply get rid of it. Number three, I think we've learned that, I mean, you think about the conversations in America last year about racial equity that happened after the George Floyd killing, a murder. I think we've learned, many of us, that like we should have been, that we were like not awake and that we were woefully unaware of like what our society was like for lots of people. And so that's brought in like, and because of the pandemic, people were forced to sit with those events in a way that they wouldn't have been if like life had been going on as normal. So I just remember like last summer when New York City, when Black Lives Matter movement started, people had the time to join the conversation in a way they would have never at any other time. So it's kind of like this crazy alignment. I mean, I see them as very tied, right?
Right.
I also think that there's also like a big question about economic justice and equality. And like then, you know, so like all of this stuff, like, you know, I remember hearing about 1968 when the world was so crazy. You know, 1968, like go research it, folks, if you haven't had a chance. Like it was like a global, all over the world, crazy stuff was happening. And really crazy stuff. And so I remember being like, what's it like to live at a time like that? Well, now I know, because like it feels like everything is connected, but yet everything is crazy all at the same time. And so I just think that like what I hope, beyond the things about workplace and all sorts of, like, people just sort of like recognize that there's a lot of fundamental change that needs to happen and that our system is not functioning correctly.
Yeah.
But I worry, unfortunately, that we just don't have a strong enough system right now to be able to put those changes into place. So I'm not a super optimistic guy right now. I hate to say.
You know, I call myself an angry optimist. So I do have some optimism, but my optimism is fueled by my anger. But I have to agree with a lot of things you're saying. And for those, you know, I really want to echo looking up 1968. And I'm from Nigeria. Nigeria was in the middle of a 3-year civil war. So that's just on my side of the world. I know a lot of things were happening in America, if you look at other countries. But it was a sense of awakening, and there was a sense of moral authority, moral justice, and all these things. And I hope if you can take anything away from what Patrick is saying is just take that moment to really reflect on who it is you want to be and what it is you want to fight for. Because I think COVID was, more than anything, was a mirror of how systems aren't designed to protect as we thought they were.
That's right? So true. I think that's exactly right. Like any kind of crisis shows you like really what your society is at its core. And like even just looking at other countries, right? Like let's like stay away from the US for a second and look at like how it's a really interesting analogy, like COVID in the UK. You have like Brexit happening, COVID, like all of the stuff that happened in there. Like it exposed all of the areas of weakness in society. Right. And so it's happened all over the place. And then it's also in other places shown how strong they are. So, you know, certain countries have responded really well, like New Zealand.
Yeah.
And you look at that and you're like, these people have their act together. They have really good government and they're able to respond. And like, you know, it's not perfect. Nothing's perfect, but like they're doing pretty good. Right. And so it's just kind of interesting to think about it on a global scale, and also like the inequality. You know, I was talking to my colleague who works with me, Usman, and he's in the Gambia. So if you're listening, Usman, what's up? And he was telling me 2 million people in the country, they got 30,000 doses through COVAX. That's it.
Yeah.
So like when people in the US are like, oh, I don't want my dose, I'm like, well, send it to the Gambia, because I'm sure that people do want them there.
Exposes privilege. You know,
yes.
And I have the same thing. My parents are Nigerian, and to this point of me having family members, it is so mind blowing for them to understand the concept of there's a choice. Wait, you have an option of vaccine. You're not going to do it, when systems in other countries are just praying to just, hey, give us. You know what? Yeah. Just give us. So
we'll take AstraZeneca. We're chill.
Yeah, no. We'll take whatever. And I hope people really reflect on those privileges. And as they reflect on privileges, and I don't want you to get defensive with yourself and say, I earned stuff. Yes, of course you did. But every one of us has some level of privilege that is paired up with power. And whenever I'm doing my workshops, especially with diversity and inclusion, if I talk about white privilege or any privilege, you know, education, all these things, I always say that means you have access, and then you have an ability to help the narrative, right? Don't feel sorry for yourself. Use it to help and democratize, right? I'm never coming at it from a shame perspective. And so I hope that we've learned more about ourselves and giving ourselves more grace, but we also just start taking more action. You know, like, hey, I'm going to be the founder that creates a company that allows, you know, people to be hybrid. Or now I didn't realize I could hire people from different countries with different backgrounds, and maybe not every job description needs to be here. So I'm going to use this, or I'm going to create a safe system for immunocompromised people. Like, there's so many options you can use with this if we start focusing on that. And yeah, hopefully that would make you more optimistic. But like you, Patrick, it's tough I can, it's tough to find that optimism when maybe many people aren't thinking that way.
Yeah, you're right about defensiveness thing too, which is, and I think I went through that period where, like, you know, everybody assumes that they're successful because they work so hard, but that everybody else is connected. It's like, well, I worked my rear off, but my classmates in school, well, their parents were rich, whatever. Like, there's all these narratives. It's like, it's really valuable to just think about, like, all of the things that you do really great, but also some of the things that you had access to,
yeah,
that maybe others didn't. Like, I'm not, it doesn't negate your hard work, but, like, nope, just don't feel, you know, defensive about it.
Yeah.
But it's more about, like, oh, like, I had 3 meals a day and, you know, access to basic healthcare. Like, a lot of people don't have that. So, like, they just don't, they get to school in the morning and they're just, like, hungry. And meanwhile, you're coming in, you had, like, your nice breakfast. So you're just able to do better. And I'm not, doesn't negate your achievement, but it's more like, what can we do to create a better system so that, like, it's not like that, right? And yeah. I think so many people get defensive. It really, like, it's, and I think it's one of these things that, like, many of us, you just kind of have to, like, be exposed to things to realize that that's going on, because being defensive, it doesn't, I don't know, like, it doesn't take anything away from you at all.
It doesn't. It doesn't. And people have to be able to separate that individualism from the system. So maybe someone is angry at you, but that doesn't mean what they're saying isn't necessarily true for the collective group that they're representing at that moment. And so you have to be willing to use your point to miss out on maybe gaining respect from said person and understanding, okay, I get this. This is a simple thing I always say, but the fact that I'm able-bodied, it's a privilege that I've taken for granted multiple times. But once the pandemic happened, I was just thinking, whoa, this is, I don't even realize how important me being able to walk and use my things there. I went to the gym the other day in my building, and there was this lady younger than me. She had a mask on. And right now, you know, obviously vaccinated, you can go, you know, you can go to the gym. Yeah. But as soon as I got there, and I said, hey, you know, are you using the tricep machine and all these things? She balked and she ran. It's like, I'm sorry. I'm immunocompromised. And I said, no, I can go to the other side. She's like, no, you go. But that's because before I came in there, there was no one else in the gym. That's a reality that she has to think about. And many of us don't even understand. You're like, oh yeah, you know, I'm breathing. There are many versions of that in your life. And so if you're getting defensive at that moment, think about the people that don't even have that option, right?
Like, yeah, and it's not like, by the way, like, the other thing is, like, the stuff we're talking about, I just want to say, like, I'm not like some social justice warrior or something. Like, I'm not that guy. You know those people who, like, everything is, like, you can't, every conversation, like, the whole time, and you're like, that's, and by the way, that's fine too, whatever. That's not who I am. But, like, this is just, like, basic, like, empathy and some, you know, for human people, which I think we can all do that. You don't have to necessarily be, like, an activist 24 hours a day to just, like, be a little more thoughtful and nice to people. So yeah. I hope that, you know, if folks hear this and they're like, well, wow, he sounds like he's just, like, a uber progressive guy. Like, not really. I mean, I'm kind of a middle of the road kind of dude, but I just sort of, like,
but that's the beauty of this. That's the beauty of this. I would fit into that description. And I know you are more in the middle of the road, but this is the idea of what you're saying is the point that you're making, right? You and I, like, might have slightly different, like, approaches, because I'm one of those people that would do that. But it's the fact that we can unite on this. And yeah. I don't know any other way to say that this isn't necessarily, this is not even politically motivated.
No, it doesn't mean you're a liberal that you
Yeah,
nice. That drives me nuts. It's like, what is it for that?
Yeah, it's not even that. I know some people will listen and they would think that, and they would have no idea that you and I have probably slightly different views in that, in terms of that in approaches. But that's the point. When you're looking at it through the wrong lens and feeling like everything is politicized, you're missing out on humans. We called people that had to work during the pandemic essential workers, and they're most of them are they're not paid. Yeah. Outside of a lot of medical professionals or people or scientists or people like that who might get highly compensated, a lot of them aren't paid in a way that they can support the family, and yet we call them essential workers. Think about the irony of that. So I don't know, but where can people find out more about
you? You gonna try to raise my taxes?
Huh? Oh yeah, I could go on and on and on. I don't know.
That's what I mean. Like, but yeah, so like, it just, I like that though. But I think it goes back to the fact that, like, a society is meant to have a shared set of values.
Yeah,
and like, these should be things that we value. It's that simple.
Yeah. Well, so if people want to hear more of this and have a framework to critically think, I think that's the point we brought up here, critical thinking. Yeah. Where can they find your books, your resources? How can they connect with you?
If you go to patrickmcginnis.com, patrickmcginnis.com, you can find everything. I have a podcast called FOMO Sapiens, talking about this stuff a lot. And the books are The 10% Entrepreneur and Fear of Missing Out, Practical Decision-Making in a World of Overwhelming Choice.
Brilliant. I'll put all those in the show notes. We'll make sure we check it out. I always love talking to you, and I'm glad we had this opportunity. But before I go, I always ask this question, which is my mission statement reframed as a question. How do you, Patrick, use your difference to make a difference?
Oof. Oh, man. I'm trying to think like what to, that's a hard question. I think because I invented the word FOMO, which causes a lot of mental health problems and challenges, I'm trying to use my difference to help people to overcome that and make better decisions.
I love that. I love that. Always self-aware. Patrick McGinnis, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show. All right. Kings, queens, and royalty. Till next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.